Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. My name is Doug Wortham.
And I'm Jason Burley.
And we have the distinct honor to sit in for your host, Tom Lyons, who has taken some much-deserved time off. On today's show, we get an update from the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. We speak to the leadership of the 34th Infantry Division. And we'll get an update from the flag line. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
A little more than 100 years ago, in the blowing sands of the New Mexico desert, our Army formed the unit now known as our 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. While they were initially known as the Sandstorm Division, it was during World War II the division earned its current name and its current motto. As the 34th fought across North Africa and Italy, their wary enemy bemoaned that all the unrelenting Red Bulls would do was attack, then attack, then attack. Today, proud Red Bulls across our state and nation carry on the legacy earned by our veterans, those that fought tirelessly during World War II, Iraq, and Afghanistan. To all of those who have and those that continue today to wear the Red Bull patch, I thank you for your dedication, your sacrifice, and your service. Red Bulls, attack, attack, attack.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Well, Jason, here it is.
It's
you and I. We're sitting in the studio. Tom has given the microphone responsibilities to you and I. What do you think about
that? Well, I'm glad that you said the microphone responsibilities, because he hasn't relinquished the microphone. And so we wish him well. And I know that he's having a good time, but we're going to have a little fun here, and we're really looking forward to today's show.
Yeah, I think so, and hopefully after today's show, when we get through this successfully, that we'll no longer have to be classified as co-hosts in training.
Well, you're a co-host in training. I am still the intern, as the big boss has told us.
Yeah, that's perfect. But we do have some work to do, don't we?
We do. And so, first of all, we'd like to welcome our first guest, Major General Retired Neil Loidl, the President and CEO of MACV, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Do I have to say Jason and Doug all the time, or just whoever I'm talking to?
Well, I think, you know, just whatever comes natural, just the same. But, you know, Jason and Doug in the morning has a really nice ring to it.
Fine.
That sounds great to me, too.
Well, welcome. What's new at MACV? What do we have going on?
Well, we continue to make progress, but you know, I'm somewhat sad to report a little bit that we played to a tie here probably the last couple of quarters, with about the same number of new homeless veterans coming forward as we're able to house. And so even though our housing rate is increasing, so is our rate of identification of new veterans. So Monday's report said there's 276 homeless veterans in Minnesota. We know that's the minimum, because that group agrees to have their name added to the roster, et cetera. But we've been at that level now, as I mentioned, for about the past two quarters. So we're going to spend some time with a little bit of hard work and some serious thought process, and try to figure out what are we not doing, right, for the cohort of that 276 that are left, so that we can solve for it. Because clearly the current model, not just ours, but maybe across the continuum in Minnesota, the current model must not be working for that small piece.
Is it a certain density and a certain geography, or is it equally across the state?
Yeah, you know, 70% of that is in the metro area, Hennepin County, Ramsey County, and the suburban metro counties, who are all grouped together. The feds have broken down the state, and all states for that matter, into continuums of care. There's 10 in Minnesota. Five of those continuum of cares are at either zero or functional zero. Two more on the way. Leaves us the three big ones that are left. Our focus right now is really in Duluth, St. Louis County, and in St. Cloud. And if we could get that done here in the next two quarters, we can just pour all the rest of our energy right here into the metro.
Yeah, perfect. You know, I understand that the focus, of course, is to end the veteran homelessness, and that's extremely important. We want to do that. I know that's one of the governor's initiatives. But what else is MACV doing? What else do you focus on is for your mission?
Well, you know, we've found there are three pretty significant pillars to try to either help prevent homelessness or end it once it occurs. The primary piece is housing. You've got to have a safe place to live. It's difficult to work on your addiction or deal with your disability or find really meaningful employment if you're trying to do that from the back seat of your car or your brother's garage, or, you know, or a tent or under the bridge. So to do that, we focus then secondarily on employment. or a means to sustain your rents, because I can help somebody into an apartment for 30, 60, or 90 days, but if we haven't figured out how they'll keep making that payment, they're just going to find themselves homeless in the next year, and now they'll have another credit, Nick, another eviction, you know, another small conviction probably that comes from that. And then so the third thing we do is we have a small legal team. By small, I mean the full-time component of that, but they coordinate for over 500 volunteer attorneys throughout the state of Minnesota. Last year helped over 2,200 veterans with small things that are barriers to employment and housing that might not be such a big deal for us. Think fines, fees, convictions. You know, if you ride the light rail, like almost 230 people do, not just veterans, every night in Minneapolis and St. Paul, because that's where they live, on the light rail all day long, and you get a fine or a ticket because you didn't pay this one time, which is likely to happen, and you're homeless, like, well, where do they mail that summons to? And then when you don't show up to pay your $52, you get a bench warrant, right? And next thing you know, when you finally do show up, you're going to jail. And that sort of really expands the cost, but it creates a level of emotional trauma that I think some people don't necessarily, they can't really appreciate. What does it mean when you do find yourself homeless, and how does that make you feel, and sort of what do you go through when you have to sort of acknowledge that it's all come to an end that way?
Yeah. We're speaking with Neil Loidl, President and CEO of MACV. How long have you been at the helm at the MACV?
Just over 3 years. I took over the helm of the MACV in February of 2017 after I finished commanding the 34th Infantry Division. So I'm pretty happy to be here today with the guests you got coming up.
Yeah, it's a great group. I mean, we do have a lineage here of division commanders. When you think of the efforts around homelessness and veterans, what are you most proud of over the last 3 years?
I think I'm most proud of the new relationships that we've built. When I was fortunate enough to get this job, it was a little bit of sort of MACV for its own self. And one of the things, you know, that we do quite well, I think, in Minnesota is to engage and involve other people in the challenges in the problem-solving process and to try to use as many tools as possible. We're all better off as veterans when there are more things for veterans to be able to do. So, you know, that's sort of what I do. We haven't changed a whole lot of the business of meeting with veterans and building housing plans and trying to help them find a place to live and get connected to the VA for their addiction. But we've worked really hard at creating great partners like the DAV, you know, the American Legion, Catholic Charities, St. Stephen's. You fill in the blank, Target, Cargill, these companies that have wonderful veteran employee networks. They've all got a little bit different name. That has all been relatively new over the last 3 years. And for me, that's a big education effort, because the more people that understand the challenges that veterans face and the challenge of homeless veterans in Minnesota, the better off we are.
Yeah, that's interesting that you talk about the partnerships, because I have to imagine that it certainly isn't easy to tackle the issues you're trying to tackle as an organization alone. I mean, we can't do this in a vacuum.
Correct, for a couple of reasons. None of us can afford it individually in a vacuum. But secondly, none of us knows all of the veterans that might need help. And so the more veterans you're connecting with, it's more likely that they know other veterans that need help. And so you can see an organization that's willing to be partnered and one that isn't. And when people tell me about their veterans, you know, I'm quick to remind them that nobody possesses the veterans in Minnesota. They're not the VFW's veterans. They're not somebody else's veterans. They're veterans. And if we can all get past that, so we try to help them however they find themselves or who can ever help best, then we don't have any challenges or barriers anymore.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm wondering, you know, how is it that you communicate what it is that you do? You know, you talked about the success you've had, but then you're a little bit disappointed in some of the recent results. So how do we continue to seek out and find these veterans so we can give them the services that they need and deserve, quite honestly?
Yeah. I think the finding network, Doug, is pretty well in place. We have county veteran service officers. We have posts for all of our major VSOs. I mean, there is a network that's available. I think the biggest thing that has come from the partnership are opportunities to do more good work. More good work tends to draw people that want to talk about your good work, and then that tends to also then alert people that haven't been finding their way into the normal system that, hey, maybe now is my time to raise my hand or show up or go in and see about getting some assistance.
You're listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with our guest, Neil Loidl, the president and CEO of MACV. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Doug Wortham along with
Jason Burley.
Yes, and we're in the studio here speaking with Neil Leutelt from MACV. And on my sheet here, it says that I'm supposed to talk to you about this beard contest going on. Is this just something that happens for people that retire, or what's your take on that, General Leutelt?
Well, I'm just curious, you know, Doug, I'm looking over at your beard, and you retired after me, so you maybe have some thoughts yourself on, is this one of those retirement things or not? But candidly, you know, when I started growing this beard, someone asked me, you know, when was the last time you had a beard? And it really was a good point. It caused me to reflect. You know, when I joined at 18, I just wasn't even mature enough yet to have a beard. And I've been serving continuously since then until this last May. So there never was another time in my life where I had a beard other than, you know, maybe a 5-day shadow at NTC or
hunting camp.
Or something from hunting camp. But seriously, I went quite a while without doing it. But as you know, Mike Wickman might tell you later, there's nothing worse than when the old guy is still around. You know, I mean, it's true. And I was still attending a lot of stuff and participating events and covering speaking opportunities and things like that. And people were still asking me, you know, are you still in? And it didn't bother me any, but I felt bad for young guys and gals who were wondering, like, oh, my gosh, there's another person sneaking up on us, so to speak. And we all know anybody that served, there's one way, surefire way to communicate that you've retired. Well, there's two. I wasn't going to gain 50 pounds, so I had to get a beard. So now nobody asks me. Are you still in? You still serving? I seen you at the thing. So that, see, there's a real practical matter as well, which is, you know, I joke with my wife, if I could just brush my teeth in the car, I would need no time at all from the alarm to backing out of the driveway.
Well, I'm with you. That was one of the first things that I said I was going to do when I retired, and that was start growing my hair and grow a beard. And, you know, it took a little while to come to a compromise with my wife as to what length of a beard I could have. But the important thing is I'm not having to shave every day, and I'm very, very happy about that.
My favorite part about that, you can't see this out there on the radio, but when he said, I'm not gaining 50 pounds, he looked directly at me.
I'm sure he was not insinuating anything.
I'm confident that he was.
Well, we could sit and talk about beards and weight gain, but we got some important stuff to talk about. And I want to touch back down on the conversation before the break. And you're talking about the partnerships that we have, that you have with MACV, and how the success of what you're able to do to end veteran homelessness, you know, really depends on not only the efforts you're doing, but the efforts of others as well. I'm going to assume that costs some money, too. So obviously, it's the partnership that comes in, but what do you do to help raise the funds, or what do you want people to know about as it relates to funds to help you to finally end veteran homelessness?
Well, I think what I would hope people would understand without needing to know too much of the nuance of our business is there's this misconception that, you know, we spend some government money to help veterans, and when that government money's up, we wait till we get some more government money, try to help some more veterans. And, you know, perhaps that was the case at some point in the past, and perhaps it's still the case in some other organizations. But the problem with that is that's not how homelessness works. There's not only 46 homeless veterans in February and then another new 46 in March. And so one of the things, the first thing we did is we worked really hard with the state and the feds, our grant authorities, to get those restrictions, those monthly restrictions lifted, because we run a good program. They audit it all the time. And now they let us spend as we need to within the year. The other thing we did is we just started to educate people who thought that, who thought all we need to do is spend a little grant money. And so last year, and I testified to this at both the House and the Senate, we spent over $350,000 of cash directly on veterans. So that's why we raise money. We don't raise money to buy a new headquarters. We don't have a new headquarters. We don't raise money to buy cars for our employees because we get cars donated from great organizations like the DAV and the Chevy dealer here in town, et cetera. We raise money so that we have more money to spend on rents and to help veterans get jobs and to deal with their legal programming. And so, you know, our theory, and I think it works, is this. I don't ask people for money directly. I've asked one person. That's because I'm required to do so, because that's how they are. And that's okay. But what we do is we educate people. And when people realize there are 276 homeless veterans right now in Minnesota, when they realize that the average rent we pay right now in the metro area is $960 a month, that's a $4,000 bill every time we help a homeless veteran in the metro. One damage deposit, 3 months rent, maybe a little bit of furniture. it doesn't take long to get through all the money that we have and all the money the VSOs have and all the money everybody else wants to give us. So that's the point. That's the reason behind it. But you don't just need to give us money. I tell people that all the time. You can volunteer your time. You can participate in our events. We're no different than any other organization that way. And if homeless veterans isn't in your heart, then donate to somebody else. But I think those of us who have the ability to help should help, you know, however we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, as fortune would have it, as I was walking out of the office earlier today, there was a note that said, we have some money and we'd like to give it to someone. Who do you think we should give it to? And I said, well, let's give it to the MACV. So I have $5,000 here for you today, sir.
Nice.
And so apparently we'll be able to take care of one of the 276 right here.
Yeah,
sir.
Right on. Indeed we will. That's how it works, right? I mean, that's really how it works best. In fact, one of the things we're proud of, and we're trying to maybe get there with the DAV, is we work with the Uptown VFW now, and we send our reimbursables over to them for veterans that are in their area or in their service area. And that way their membership can vote on it and the membership can see what they're doing. Like, hey, do we want to help homeless veteran John today? Yep. And then they reimburse us for it. So it's a very smooth operation. Accounting is perfect on it because nobody's paying in advance. There's no money into the slush fund. And it's one of the things I hope to do with donations like Jason just mentioned, which is to be able to demonstrate to corporations and individuals, you know, you gave us $1,000. You know what we did with that? We paid 1 month's rent and two gas cards, right,
so
for a veteran.
If there are other people out there that want to make some type of a donation and they don't have the luxury of running into Jason McBurley on the street, how would that money get to you or to where it needs to be as it relates to the MACV?
Yeah, you know, if it's specifically for MACV, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on the internet. You can catch us at any number of events. You can come to our office. You can tell any veteran service officer or give money, if that's your inclination, to your local veteran service organization that you're a part of, because they're also not, for the most part, in the business of saving it or trying to spend it on something other than veterans. And I think we've created enough energy around this homeless veteran cause, at least for the next year or so, because I think that's about all longer it's going to take on the current part of the challenge, that most of them are deciding to get in on it as well. So they have other funding priorities too, but they do really good work in supporting what we're trying to do at the local level. And I'd rather see the solution at the local level. Mm-hmm. No reason to aggregate the veterans at the top of the system, aggregate all the funding at the top of the system just to push it back down again and endure all the transaction costs. Let's just help people right where they are right now with whoever happens to be closest to them that can do the help.
Is there any particular type of volunteerism that you'd really like to see, some areas that you could really use the help?
Well, we can always use help in the legal program because you've got to be a lawyer for part of that. But other than that, no, I like people to volunteer again where they find themselves and the things that's of most interest to them. So we got big events, we got little events, people come to the office. It's what you want to do. Some people want to interact with veterans, some people don't, but still want to help. You let us know what you're interested in, we'll let you know how you can help us.
You know, it's a very serious topic and serious situation, but are you having any fun?
Am I having any fun?
In this role, are you? Where do you find having
how
fun?
How about if we just slice that a little bit? And I say I find an awful lot of satisfaction in helping people. I do. Do I have fun on, you know, like at the short term tactical level? It'd be easy for me to say I have fun too. We got a good team. Things are going well, even though we're kind of stuck in this pause, and all of that is fun. It's not fun for me though sometimes to see the struggles that veterans have. You know, a lot of us made a mistake that maybe we had a good mentor for, we had a good platoon sergeant, maybe we were in a job that allowed for mistakes at the time, whatever. Most of the population that we deal with, you know, they went left when everybody else went right, and they didn't have that support, and now they're all upside down. You know, some of them earned it, there's no doubt about it, but most of them just didn't quite get the hand up that some of the rest of us had, and I just feel obligated to help that crew.
So we just have maybe 30 seconds left here. Any final words you'd like to say to the audience here?
Well, I think I'm the guy that's supposed to remind the audience, you know, send in your comments and feedback relative to this Doug and Jason show thing because, you know, I like it. But, you know, there's something to be said for Tom's sort of straightforward approach to getting the facts out. And I didn't even get half of the facts out that I got on my prepared sheet here today. So I hope everybody is free with their comment as me.
Well, we'll make sure we have you back in the studio, and we'll stick to the script just a little bit more. Sir, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us in the studio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we look forward to having you back again. That was Neil Leutelt with MACV. You're listening to Minnesota Military Radio, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio. This is Jason Burley with my co-host, Doug Wortham. We'll have the command team of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division coming up next. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs offers support and customer service 7 days a week to Minnesota's veterans and their families. LinkVet is Minnesota's one-stop shop that offers immediate answers with one-on-one assistance for all veteran-related questions and needs. You can also visit MinnesotaVeteran.org to chat with a VetLink representative or to search our large question and answer database. Call 1-888-LINKVET. Almost any veteran issue or question you have can be addressed by the professional LinkVet staff by contacting 1-888-LINKVET.
Thank you, and it is my pleasure to introduce the command team from the 34th Infantry Division, Brigadier General Mike Wickman and Command Sergeant Major Stephen Whitehead. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Jason, Doug, it's great to be here.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, it's great to have you in the studio, and you know, it's good to have the team that we have today. It's great to see y'all in uniform, and I just need to know, Stefan, you're pretty darn busy with what you're doing in the civilian side, but here you are, relatively new in the position as the Command Sergeant Major of the 34th Infantry Division. How's that going for you?
It's going really well, Doug. It's definitely been a learning curve, but when you're part of an organization like the 34th Infantry Division, we have such great leaders in our organization to come in and take the helm. It's really been easy to really transition into it because great leaders around me.
Yeah, that's great. And General Wickman, I mean, we served together for quite a while, and here you are. The 34th Infantry Division, it's got a storied history. I mean, what does it mean to you to be the guy, the commanding general of this wonderful division?
Well, it is. I mean, it's an honor to say the least. It's impactful and it resonates. We talked earlier, walking down the hall of the headquarters, you see the lineage of past commanders, and you certainly respect the responsibility that goes with the reputation that is the 34th Infantry Division, the Red Bulls. And so, as the Command Sergeant Major said, it's hard to go wrong with the quality of soldiers that exist in the unit.
And so it doesn't just happen overnight. You've had, of course, various command positions throughout your career. Would you mind sharing just a couple of minutes? How did you get to where you're at? What was that career like for you to set you up for this great responsibility?
Well, I mean, for me, it goes back to 1989. Spent a few years on active duty, and in the mid 90s, came into the Minnesota Army National Guard, and was assigned to multiple positions, multiple command positions, company command, squadron commander, deputy brigade commander, and then worked my way up through division with a lot of training activity. And honestly, how did I get to where I am today? I got to here because, as was previously mentioned in the last episode or last interview, mentorship. And you got to hear earlier today one of my greater mentors. And so I think as a result of benefiting from the quality leadership and the quality soldiers that we've discussed, it comes from that.
So we're speaking with General Mike Wickman and also Command Sergeant Major Stephen Whitehead here on Minnesota Military Radio, the command team from the 34th Infantry Division. So Command Sergeant Major Whitehead, you've had a good run in your career as well, and now here you are the senior enlisted person inside of the division. What does that mean to you?
It's a huge honor. As a general saying, it goes right back to, as he said, the mentorship. I joined back in 1991 in field artillery, and I joined because it was a family thing. But the bigger thing back then, I joined because of college benefits. Wanted to go on and, get my education and all that. And through mentoring of all my squad leaders and platoon sergeants and everything, and continue seeing, the work they're doing, it excited me to continue to want to mentor those below me as well. So it motivated me to continue to challenge myself, and those mentors that helped me get to where I'm at today.
Big division, great history, 23,000 soldiers across multiple states and a lot of great history. But what's on the docket for the division? What's coming up?
So the divisional headquarters just came out of deployment last summer and had to pick up the ball and run just because the op tempo is keeping us busy. So right now within the division and the soldier that you've mentioned, you've got our aviation brigade, which is currently deployed to the Middle East. And so making sure that they get all the support that they need, especially with family, friends, employers back home, that's a heavy focus for us. Additionally, as we move forward in time, especially coming up this summer, our Armored Brigade Combat Team will do a deployment to the National Training Center for a very significant training exercise. It's something that has occupied a great deal of their time and energy and is really, regardless of whether it's active duty or reserve component, the National Training Center is one of the critical elements that postures an organization to prepare for a deployment and takes a lot of time. And so making sure that the Armored Brigade Combat Team is ready for that challenge and ready for the events on the way forward is something that is a primary focus for us. And then additionally, as we come towards the summer, we also have one of our separate battalions, two of the 135 headquartered down in Mankato. They will be deploying as well. And so it's these deployments and the exercise requirements, the training requirements that go with it is really kind of a heavy focus for us.
The division's demographic has seemingly changed. The high op tempo, you know, from when I served in the division and just even recently, there's changes in the kind of complexion of the soldiers. How do you keep everybody going, Sergeant Major?
You know, Jason, you're right. I mean, we are definitely getting younger. You know, when I joined in 91, we had soldiers that are sticking around, a lot of soldiers sticking around for 20, 30 years, and you're not seeing that as often. So we have our soldiers that are stepping up really nicely and, you know, being challenged because of their age and not really having the multiple years of experience and maybe that occupation that they do and stuff like that. But now they're being challenged to step up and be a leader of a formation. So it's great, but it's also a great challenge to really make sure we're helping these soldiers to succeed in their career as well. And, you know, our soldiers today they're more techie, you know, so they bring a different experience to the formation and taking that experience and making sure that we're using that to our advantage.
The change in the demographic, are we still as successful as we've always been in terms of recruiting, or how are things going for the strength of the division?
Yeah, the recruiting is going really well. Our recruiters work really hard. I'm very proud of the recruiters and how well they work and going out and finding it. You know, we're on track right now to hit our mission again this year, which is great. But the bigger piece with the recruiting is also comes the retention and making sure we're focusing on retaining those soldiers in our formation as well. And that's been a really top focus for all of us in leadership to make sure we're retaining our soldiers as well.
So I need to ask, Sergeant Major, you know, you talk, the general talked about the op tempo that you have, and you talk about the leadership, the challenges that you face with some of the younger soldiers, let's call it. But everybody who's enlisting today is post 9/11.
Yep.
And so there's an assumption then that they already know what the op tempo is going to be. So how does that op tempo challenge, how do you face that? How do you deal with it? Because it still has a lot of requirements.
It is. And I think, Doug, you're spot on because of the fact of I think a lot of the bigger challenges is the senior people, the ones that have been in for the 20 years because it's a change for them. But the soldiers that are joining today, this is all they know. So really working with our senior people that have been in for 15 plus years and making them change their mindset on what the National Guard is and all this training. So really making the putting the focus on that.
Yeah, perfect. So we've got just about a minute left in this segment, and sir, I want to come back to you. You talked about the stuff that's going on outside the division headquarters itself. Is there anything big coming up for the HQ, the headquarters here in Rosemount, for the division?
Well, coming out of the deployment, our operational tempo does ease back a little bit, and so that's why I said the focus really is placed on those subordinate brigades. Subordinate units that are focused on an upcoming training exercise or an upcoming deployment. So for us, that really is our priority at this point.
We've been speaking with the command team of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, Brigadier General Mike Wickman and Command Sergeant Major Stephen Whitehead. This is the Minnesota Military Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio. This is Jason Burley with Doug Wortham, and we're speaking with the command team of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, Brigadier General Mike Wickman and Command Sergeant Major Stephen Whitehead. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thanks.
You know, we talked a little bit about the activities, but I'm reminded that the days of 39 days a year and 15 days of AT are kind of behind us. What kind of impact does that have on soldiers today?
That's a great question, Jason. It certainly is a dynamic that the leadership at all levels needs to be mindful of as they work through things like retention. There are significant stressors. We do ask for more time, and the stress is placed on the families, on the employers, on friends, and failure to acknowledge that will definitely result in a problem. These challenges force us to, you know, work with soldiers at all levels to ensure that there is some balance. And so the stress is at least minimized or acknowledged by the leadership. And it does result in significant stress. I mean, it can come out simply in issues where soldiers aren't able to make drill, but it can be in much more extreme areas. You could see, you know, DUIs surface. You could see friction, you know, challenges that relate to emotional issues. And so resiliency, because people are first. People are the priority in the Minnesota National Guard. And so, you know, the leadership, the Adjutant General, General Jensen, has gone to great lengths to ensure that there are infrastructure exists to support soldiers. Just as we talked about in a previous segment, you know, in many instances, we have to recognize there are challenges, and it's incumbent upon us to make sure we have the infrastructure that exists. And so I think the Minnesota National Guard, Minnesota Army National Guard, has come a long way in trying to work through where we see risk factors develop. And so acknowledging those risks within the Minnesota National Guard, you see kind of a growth in that infrastructure. So you have psychological health coordinators, you have directorates that focus specifically on resiliency. You apply training within those drill weekends that where in the past you had the whole formation show up on the drill floor and you got a briefing and you stared at some PowerPoint presentations and we checked the block and well, honestly, we hoped that that would succeed. Today, it's different. You know, the acknowledgement of the complex problem and the importance of soldiers, you know, has caused us to adapt. Hopefully, and I mean that sincerely, hopefully to successfully deal with these complex problems. And so training, as I mentioned, not on a drill floor. It's, you know, one individual with 600 individuals. You involve the leadership all the way down to squad leaders. And so between infrastructure, acknowledgement, it's one of the ways, for example, with suicide. Suicide is an issue. It's an issue societally. But where there's a societal issue, there's going to be an issue in the National Guard because the National Guard is a part of the society. And so we take very seriously the challenges that you know our soldiers, our service members are facing when it comes to resiliency and the issues that suicide places upon the force. And so, you know, those pieces of infrastructure and the thought process that goes into it, I think helps us deal with the challenges that you mentioned in the beginning, 39 days, 15 days, it's not the case anymore. And so there's a great demand on soldiers, employers, family, the National Guard. And so acknowledging that and having a way forward, I think, allows us to at least in some way successfully adapt to the situation.
So in the studio with us is Brigadier General Mike Wickman and Command Sergeant Major Stephen Whitehead from the 34th Infantry Division. And, you know, we know that as a leadership of an organization, in regardless of what business or industry we're in, we're in the people business, and that's what leadership does. It takes care of its people. And that people-first mentality is great to have inside the organization. And, of course, that helps through challenging things like the op tempo. But despite all of that, and everything that's going on, all the things that we do, right? And knowing that we've got the best Army National Guard division in the Army, if not the best division in the Army, what really sets the 34th Infantry Division apart from all other divisions?
It's the soldiers. It's the service members. In my role as division commander, I found myself spending a great deal more time with our partners on the active duty in various branches and getting exposed to, the other formations. And without a doubt, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Army National Guard, the Red Bulls provide some of the finest soldiers that I think this nation has to offer. Where does it come from? It's good training. It's good leadership. It is an energy. I mean, one of the things that honestly separates, this organization from many others is there is a motivation and a drive that really is second to none. And the quality and the soldiers, the Red Bull continues to shine, and I think does its lineage proud. I think it does Minnesotans proud.
So, Command Sergeant Major, I mean, obviously the people are great, and you're building on this young non-commissioned officer corps. Any other initiatives or things that you're doing to help with that development of our soldiers and in future leaders inside the organization?
Yeah, Doug, actually, I think one of the bigger things we're really focused on is the general just said, when their soldiers are showing up, they're ready to work. I mean, their formation, they're ready to get to work, get after it. So they're ready to do it. They want to be active. They want to be busy during drill weekends. So we're taking advantage of that, getting them to schools, to get them the extra education that they may need so to help them advance their career in a timely manner. Because, with the STEP program that we have, Select, Train, Educate, Promote, it's a challenge, to compete against that annual training, the school and stuff like that. But our leaders are identifying soldiers earlier in their career and making sure we get them opportunities that they need.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, gentlemen, I hate to say it, but we are out of time here, and I look forward to having we both, Jason and I, look forward to having you both in the studio again, because it's great to follow the stories of the Red Bull Division, and we appreciate the time that you've spent to come in and visit with us, and we look forward to watching your careers as you move forward. That's Brigadier General Mike Wickman and Command Sergeant Major Stephen Whitehead from the 34th Infantry Division. Thanks, gentlemen, for coming in today.
Thanks, guys. Gentlemen.
Joining us now from the flag line is Tim Leonhardt of the Patriot Guard. Tim, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you.
And exactly, how are things going for you today?
They're going good.
Yeah, how's that weather out there?
Pardon me?
How's that weather out there?
A little bit on the nippy side, but we're always prepared.
Yeah, I have to imagine that, you want to get through all of the snow, get the cold behind us, and I bet you're looking forward to the riding season coming ahead.
Oh, we are. It's always easier to park 200 motorcycles than it is to park 200 cars.
Yeah, I bet it is. You know, it's always important to talk about the mission of the Patriot Guard. Can you remind us, what is your mission? Why are you here? Why do you exist?
We want to ensure that the military heroes, the fallen heroes, get the honor, dignity, and respect that they deserve from the American people. We want to show them that they're appreciated for what they've done.
Yeah, and that's such an important thing. Here are our veterans, our service members, our heroes, as you stated, putting their lives on the line, serving this great country, and it's important to provide that dignity and respect, isn't it?
Yes, it is. They give so much. I mean, their families give. Look at when they're gone, that family has to operate without that one member. So they give a lot. So when we have a funeral for one of them, we want to make sure that the family knows that what they did was really appreciated by just ordinary people.
Yeah, right. And, last time that we spoke, of course, we talk about the fact that you don't have to ride a motorcycle to participate in the Patriot Guard. You just want people to come on and out, and really all they need to be able to do is hold a flag and be there wanting to support our service members, right?
Yes, that's all we're asking. The people that are there just appreciate that there's complete strangers there to honor their loved one.
Yeah, right. And so, is there anywhere in Minnesota that you won't go?
No, we'll go wherever we're invited.
And if someone wants to invite the Patriot Guard to support some type of an event, how is it that they do that?
If you go to our website, which is mnpatriotguard.org, and look on the left side, there's a little button there that says invite the Patriot Guard.
And so you'd like to drive people there, and I'm assuming that you're always looking for people to support certain events or every event, aren't you?
Yes, every event. We're always looking for people to step up and hold a flag and honor our fallen heroes.
And never too many volunteers, is there?
There is never.
Every event is important. It doesn't matter what the situation. The important thing from the Patriot Guard's perspective is to have people there and show that dignity and respect.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you calling in and speaking with us today, Tim. And I hope that you have a wonderful rest of the day. And I hope that the spring comes soon so you can get back out on that motorcycle.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tim. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Bye. So, Jason, I got to come back to you. We got just the 45 seconds here. And, hey, we did our first show together.
And
what do you think?
It seemingly went well. I was pleased. How are you?
Yeah, I thought it went pretty well. And, you know, it was a great crew to have in the studio today. Great to have Tim calling in, as usual, to hear about the Patriot Guard. But you know what? That 34th Infantry Division, the command team, the leadership they have, I mean, what a great organization.
Yeah, as much fun as this is, and I think that was a part of why both of us have decided to be here, it's really just an honor to spend time with the guests that we have. You know, I've got a command coin in my hand right now that General Loydell gave me, and I'm thinking about, there's two commanding generals of the 34th ID. How incredible is that?
Yeah, what an outstanding thing. So that's great. And I look forward to having many, many more shows with you as we move along.
As do I. Thanks, Doug. We're just about out of time. If you're a Minnesota veteran and would like to share your story, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Neil Loydell, the president and CEO of MACV, the command team from the 34th Infantry Division, Brigadier General Mike Wickman and Command Sergeant Major Stephen Whitehead, and Tim Leonhardt of the Flagline, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk with Dr. Stephen Fu at the VA and Melissa Johnson with Minnesota National Guard Child and Youth Programs. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Jason Burley.
And I'm Doug Wortham.
And we hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.